This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, it's RÚV English Radio. I'm Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company. It's Monday. It's the 18th of November. We're just 12 days. Goodness, 12 days away from polling day here in Iceland. Early voting, of course, already taking place within Iceland and in other countries as well. And my guest today, once again, is Stiggur Helgason, my colleague here at RÚV, who's going to guide us through what's been happening. What's been happening for you, of course, is that you managed to get a quick holiday at a time when you didn't think there was going to be an election.
I got a week's holiday. Yeah, it was an unfortunate timing, but nice. Yeah.
I think you were in the Canary Islands.
I was, yes. Like every other Icelander.
Yeah, and that, of course, is a part of the world where early voting has been taking place in the last couple of days, quite enthusiastically, because a lot of Icelanders do ultimately move to the Canary Islands.
Yeah, and go on holidays there, especially in the wintertime, because it's like one of the few places where you can go during this season where you can't get guaranteed good weather, so that's why it's very
popular. You did get the good weather.
I did, okay. Yeah.
Marvellous. All right, let's look at what's been happening, I would say, in your absence over the last sort of few days. Here at RÚV, we've continued, of course, to press the party leaders on RÚV as to what they and their parties want to do. So let's take a look at some of those programmes. The Left Greens, the leader of the Left Green movement, that is Svandís Svavarsdóttir, of course, talking about it being a difficult coalition that the party wants to move on from. Two coalitions, in fact, because they have been in government now for two terms.
Yeah. And, of course, not the first time she or the Left Greens have talked about that, being a sort of a hindrance for them actually taking part in this coalition. But again, as you say, and it was interesting to hear her. She was very vocal about it having possibly been a mistake to join this same coalition government the second time around.
Yeah, she says a government spanning from the right to the left may by its nature not be suited to serving more than one term.
Yeah.
Which is a way of saying, did we get that right? Did we make a mistake?
Exactly. She's basically saying we shouldn't have done it. And I mean, looking at the numbers, the polling numbers, it's difficult to come to another conclusion than it having been a mistake for them. Politically, for that party at least, I mean, they almost don't poll anymore.
They're below the 5%.
Below the 5% mark, it doesn't look very good for them.
It's been a tough year for her, of course, personally, because she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And that announcement was, if I remember correctly, on the day that she was to face a no-confidence motion over her approach to the whaling issue. Of course, that dogged her successor as well, didn't it, that issue? We might come back to that in the conversation. Yeah. So it's been a difficult year for her leading a party that may disappear from Parliament.
Exactly. And, culmination of bad things in one year if that happens under her leadership 12 days from now.
I suppose her difficulty is, reading between the lines of what she is saying, is that if the word left is in your name, firstly, if you're a left-wing party and you've been in government with a right-wing party or right-wing parties for two parliaments, it might be difficult to persuade people to vote for you if they want left-wing policies.
That's exactly right. And I think it's fair to say that left-wing voters are also a bit more unforgiving.
Is it that right-wing voters are more forgiving of left-wing policies coming through than left-wing voters are of right-wing policies coming through?
Yes. And, you know, just compromise in general, I think.
Yeah.
And more used to compromise. Because the right-wing parties the Independence Party in especially has been in power and had to compromise.
Yes.
And most of the past century, so that this is not something they're unfamiliar with. But
do you think that's why they've been so successful then? Because we've talked before about them, you know, using these to poll 40% if not more. Is that because internally they all compromised with each other, but they put forward a sort of united
face. It could be, because they were very large and they were a united front of right-wing people in Iceland, whilst it was more divisive on the left wing.
Let's turn to a party which is only running in one constituency, in the Reykjavik North constituency, Responsible Future. The leader of that party, Johannes Loftsson, was also a guest on Roof last week. And their big issue is something that's already happened, I suppose, the government's handling of COVID-19. He also wants doctors to be allowed to prescribe ivermectin for more illnesses than is currently permitted. This is a strange approach, given that we are talking about stuff that's already happened, to build a policy on.
Yes, it is. And I mean, it's not a huge issue in most people's minds. Of course, COVID was a huge issue, and the government's handling of it was a huge issue. And none of the other parties, I think, are in any way opposed to the idea of, you know,
having a conversation.
Having a conversation, doing some introspection on how we did. Should we do things differently if we ever find ourselves in a similar situation in the future? Everyone is in agreement, I think, about, I mean, that we probably didn't do everything perfectly and we should maybe review it. But it being your only or your main issue going into an election is
brave.
It's brave, and it doesn't look like it's resonating with a lot of voters either.
Maybe it's about, you know, the whole candidacy. I don't know. Maybe it's as much about getting that conversation onto the agenda as it is getting someone elected.
Yeah,
that seems more likely. But then, as I say, in this interview, one of their policies is to allow doctors to prescribe ivermectin more frequently. Now, this is an anti-parasitic drug. It was first used by vets to treat heartworm in animals. And there has been, I think it's fair to say, a fringe belief, sort of mathematically fringe belief,
it is,
that COVID is something that can be treated using this particular drug.
Yeah, and I mean, the World Health Organization and other international institutions, they classify claims about ivermectin as, you know, misinformation.
Yeah, they say it's not recommended. You mentioned the World Health Organization, European Medicines Agency, the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. So
exactly.
The big three really are saying, no, we don't recommend this drug for this purpose.
Yeah, and I mean, Johannes was, he sort of tried to turn this discussion into a general discussion about doctors, the independence of doctors, that they should have more freedom to decide just what medicine they prescribe for anyone. This, again, has not been an issue for any political party
Or maybe
mostly the two or three or four doctors that are on Johannes's list of candidates.
On the list, okay. One party that is polling very well, or quite well, depending which pollster you look at, is Vidresen, the Reform Party, I suppose you translate that in English. And the party leader has also been on Roof as well. She has been talking about selling the state's shares in Islandsbanki and Landsbankin during the next parliamentary term, using the money to strengthen healthcare. Would it raise a lot? Is there lots of cash sitting there?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it would be it would be dozens of billions of kroners.
More money that's in my pocket or your pocket.
Yeah.
Certainly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they've been polling really good, a lot better than they've ever been, basically. Which is somewhat interesting, because there was this talk. I mean, it was only like a few weeks ago. It's not not longer back than that, where the talk was about the the swing of the pendulum to the right.
Yes.
And then we were talking about further right. We were talking about, you know, harsher immigration laws. That's where the pendulum was swinging. But that's not where the Reform Party is at all.
No. I mean, they're a split.
And they are the high-risers, suddenly.
And they split from the Independence Party, but they're a very pro-European, a very pro-EU yeah. split from the Independence Party.
It's basically a split, yeah.
Is that where the vote's coming from, then, do you think?
I'm actually not sure about
that. Hard to say.
It's hard to say, because we have polls that sometimes show that. We haven't had that recently, where, I mean, what people voted the last time and what they're thinking of voting now.
Yeah, yeah.
But my feeling is that those people thinking about voting for the Reform Party now might be more centrist than right-wing people.
And if that's the case, then you can imagine that they would work, well, maybe not well, but they would work happily. They would get into coalition quite happily with the Social Democratic Alliance, who also sit close to the centre, maybe the centre-left. But crucially, they also share similar views on the EU as well. So that wouldn't be an issue. That wouldn't be
that
something
would
that would stop them working
be an issue,
together.
But they would almost definitely need a third party on board. And that might be the problem, finding someone to... talking about the EU, at least.
Mm.
It's not obvious which party would be on board with that, third party. But it's interesting that the leader, Þorgerður Katrín, who used to be the vice chairman of the Independence Party, she, I wouldn't say ruled out, but she talked in another interview about it being pretty unlikely that they would want to work with the Independence Party in the next government.
With the Independence Party?
Yeah.
Okay.
She, and...
Can we deduce from that then that there are other parties that she wouldn't want to work with, such as the Centre Party?
Would
they also be on the list of parties? What about the People's Party or the Progressives?
Not sure about that. Yeah. They would probably be interested in working with the Progressives, but there are huge differences between the Progressives and the Reform Party.
Yes.
When it comes to things like agriculture. Especially and also the EU issue.
I suppose if there were a third party that was sort of agnostic on that question, who said, well, we don't ourselves want to be in the EU, but we wouldn't object to there being a referendum or a plebiscite on it, you could just about imagine a coalition. It depends how important the EU issue is to Visegrad and also to the Social Democrats. It might not be an issue at all.
We know it's an issue to the Reform Party.
Okay.
That's
a deal breaker.
It used to be the Social Democrats' biggest issue some years ago. But now it doesn't seem to be a huge issue for them anymore, even though they're positive. But they... If the Social Democrats and the Reform Party were to try to form a government, then certainly the EU issue might arise... close to the top of issues.
And we should, of course, say that there was a plan in place for Iceland to move along that accession path to the EU, but the letter saying we'd like to do this as a country was withdrawn, I think, by that first coalition government, wasn't it, between the Independence Party, the Progressives and and the Left Greens?
The
government before that.
The government before that.
Yes,
the government of the independent, or even not even before that. It was the government of the Independence Party and the Progressives. But that was that Progressive Party was very different from the Progressives we have today, because it was led by Sigmundur Davíð Gunnlaugsson,
who is now the leader of the Centre Party. Who is not in favour of the EU, I think it is fair to say.
And the secretary of the foreign secretary at that time was Gunnar Bragi Sveinsson, who is a member of the Centre Party today and its candidate. And he was the one who made the decision of basically recalling the letter.
So the EU is either going to be absolutely fundamental or not matter at all. It'll be one of the two. Yeah.
And we really don't know.
We don't know.
We might have to question the leaders a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think it's either going to take off as an issue or, as I say, it's just not going to be an issue at all. Maybe we won't know until people have voted and then mm-hmm. you see what sort of parliamentary mathematics and arithmetic is possible. Okay, we touched on the Social Democratic Alliance. They had a bad week in the sense that one of their candidates decided to quit after comments that he made on a website about 20 years ago, very derogatory comments about women. They were unearthed. Ultimately, he decided to quit. What do we know about him and what he said? And who is he? Or was he?
He's a former journalist, editor. Pretty well-respected.
Over Snyder, you listen.
Yes. He was... He had been a journalist for... a few Icelandic media outlets, and then he founded Kjarnin a few in 2013 and became one of the editors of Heimildin when Kjarnin and Stundin were joined to form Heimildin. And just this fall decided to get into politics with the Social Democrats, and then this happened. As you said, they unearthed a blog. He had, like, 20-odd years ago with a few of his friends.
Under the name German Steel.
Yeah, he blogged under that name.
Yeah.
And, as you said, made very derogatory comments, probably meant as some sort of satire or joke, but has aged horribly, as he himself said.
It doesn't land well on the page, does it?
No, it doesn't. Now. And he eventually came under a lot of pressure. We don't know how much pressure he came under from within his own party, but from just the community, the society,
yes.
And finally decided on Saturday to withdraw himself. Basically, he can't resign from the list of candidates. He'll be there come election. But his statement just said, If elected, I won't take the job. So it just goes to the next person on the list.
And he was third on the list for that party in the Reykjavik North constituency.
Yes.
So if, for example, they return three candidates, of which he's the third, the fourth one effectively takes the job.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a race or a seat that we'll be paying a lot of attention to on election night. I also want to, and you mentioned that particular publication because it's also been in the news, I want to talk about whaling, and I want to talk about the Member of Parliament who is, shall we say, the special assistant, I suppose, to the current Prime Minister, who's also the Acting Minister of Food in this caretaking government. Tell me about him and tell me about the sting operation as he sees it, which is denied by this publication, but as he sees it.
Well, I would say it's always a sting operation. It's just a matter of who's responsible for it.
Yes. Okay.
His son is called Gunnar Bergman Jónsson. The parliament member is Jón Gunnarsson. He's a former minister, very close to Bjarni Benediktsson, the leader of the Independence Party, and now his right hand man in the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries. And his son was caught on tape by an undercover someone who's said to be a former Mossad agent, the Israeli Secret Service.
But to be clear, that's not how he presented himself. He presented himself as a Swiss businessman.
He presented himself as a Swiss businessman who wanted to discuss property dealings. And they started talking about whaling. And Gunnar, Jón's son, told him that Bjarni put his father into the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries to see to it that that whaling would be allowed again before this election.
Within the 12 days or 15 days left of this caretaker government. Okay, so that's controversial in itself, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah. They, both Jón and Bjarni, deny this. Say they don't have any idea what Jón's son is talking about in this recording.
But Jón himself says, or had said, and I'm quoting him here from, I think, about a week ago, if the police do not, in fact, see a reason to take this up of their own initiative, in my view, this is a serious case of espionage involving the highest authorities of the state.
He's talking about the Icelandic state.
Yeah, not the Israeli government.
I mean, is it espionage? It's an undercover operation by an anti-whaling or environmentalist group. It's a foreign state.
So where does the Mossad connection
The person who conducted the interview, who was the undercover Swiss businessman, is supposedly a former Mossad agent.
Okay. But not acting for Mossad.
Not acting for Mossad now. He used to work for them.
It's just an additional complication in the story.
Yeah.
And then we mentioned Heimildin, the journalistic outlet. Their editor says it's not accurate to say that they were involved in the making of the recordings. Now, they got involved, or they're thought to be involved, because they contacted Jón Gunnarsson quite soon after this phone call happened. Or at least one of the journalists did.
Yeah, it was actually not a phone call. It was a sit down. It was a videotaped discussion. But it had. This recording had been floated amongst Icelandic media, and Heimildin picked up on it, called Jón and Bjarni and asked them if there was anything in it, what was going on. And then Heimildin got connected to it, and people thought that they had been behind it in some way. They maintain that that's not the case. They just got the recording, like some other media outlets did as well.
Yes.
So
the denial comes from them. We then move to where we are with the issue of whaling.
Mm-hmm.
And there are now four companies that have submitted applications to conduct whaling, presumably within the time frame that remains, within the 12 days of the caretaker government.
They want a license for next year.
Yeah. But they're applying now because they think there's more chance with the caretaker government.
That might be, but then again, maybe you just had to apply this fall. But what this expose, if you'd call it that, has done is made it almost politically impossible for Bjarni to hand out whaling quota.
Because he has previously said he sees no obstacles. He saw no obstacle to the Kvalu application, which had been the only one. He said, legally, procedurally, there's no problem. The caretaker government can and ought to behave according to precedent, I guess. Now there are four applications, mm-hmm. 12 days left until the election, and you think it's impossible, politically impossible for him to...
I wouldn't say nothing's impossible.
Very difficult.
I would say it's very difficult for them to do it without it being, scrutinized under the light of this...
These interlocking stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with 12 days to go, it could happen, but we don't think it will now. Does the incoming government, let's say for the sake of argument, we don't know what the incoming government is going to be, but let's say that it has a different view from the Independence Party mm-hmm. broadly on the issue of whaling. Let's say an anti-whaling government mm-hmm. comes to power. Do we know, will it still be bound to process these applications in the same way because they came in before the election?
I think it would be, they would have to process them, whether they would have grounds to deny them or dismiss them. Mm. That's another story.
And one that we've seen before, of course, because you had the food minister from the Left Greens, a party who are against whaling, saying, "I've got no choice, my hands are tied, I've got to issue these licences."
Yeah, and that was found to have been illegal, basically, but more because she did it so close to the whaling season.
Yes, the day before.
The day before. So it was more the short time frame that was criticised and thought to be unlawful rather than the decision itself. Had it been made like a couple of months earlier, I think that would probably have been...
Yes, and I think her rationale, we're talking about Svandis here, her rationale was that whaling should not proceed on the basis of new information that she had from the Animal Welfare Council and various other organizations as well.
Yeah, she came to the conclusion that she just basically couldn't.
Yes. But then didn't her successor decide that she had no choice but to allow whaling? Bjarki? Because of her reading of the law.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And again, she was from the same party.
That was following changes that the whaling companies had made, or company.
Yes, yes.
They changed how they actually did their whaling. Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm getting into the weeds on this is that a lot of listeners to Roof English Radio, a lot of readers of the service, are international.
Yep.
And hate the idea of whaling, hate the idea that Iceland allows it, can't understand why these licences are even in play at all, can't understand why the country and or the government and or the president, for that matter, who's been lobbied as well, doesn't just say, it's over, we're not doing it anymore. Mm-hmm. But we're not in that position, are we? We're not. The country is, for all these reasons, the administration, the government is not able to say we're not handing out any more licences because we don't want to. There are all of these competing narratives going on.
In the end, it's a political decision, though.
It will be in the end, but it's not yet, is
but,
it?
But right now, we have these laws and this system in place, which allows for applications, and we're supposed to grant the licenses according to the systems in place. But those are systems we could easily change if that was the political decision.
Yeah.
I mean, and there was a stop in whaling for, I can't remember how long, it was like a decade or something,
where we
didn't whale at all. That was just a political decision.
Because it seems that if you were a political party and you wanted the votes of non-Icelanders around the world, if that's what you were going for, you would run on a manifesto that says, we are going to ban whaling tomorrow and nothing else. And you'd get 100% of the vote, 90% of the vote, I reckon, straight away. That's how it looks from outside of the country.
Mm-hmm. That's interestingly enough, not the situation here in Iceland.
No, it's not.
There is pretty big division. There are Icelanders who are very vehemently opposed to whaling, but then there are, and that's not a small proportion of the country that's actually just very much in favor of it.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of, you know, it's a matter of independence, and just we're free to do whatever we want here. That's the kind of mentality that's behind it.
Yeah. And you will hear that view expressed by people who, on all other sort of animal welfare issues, you might say, are very, very, you might say, progressive.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised to hear that view expressed. I think what is changing, maybe, is that a lot of Icelanders are realising that there's more money in watching whales than in hunting whales. And that feels like it's been a change in recent years. And maybe that's what will determine this, is the market.
And I mean, the almost, this is what's funny about it, is that it's not a matter of money for the whales per se. It's, everyone seems to agree that the, basically the one company who's doing this, Kvalurhof, is not making a lot of money off of this, if they're making any money at all. But what they are doing, if they're not making any money, they're willing to lose money to pay people to do this job.
Yeah.
People in places where there's maybe not a lot of jobs to be had. So that's what it comes down to more than the financial benefits of whaling. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, in Akranes, where they have the whaling station, there's a lot of people who get jobs there in the summertime, well-paid jobs to do whaling and everything that's relating to whaling.
I remember when whaling was banned by Svandis, there was a furious meeting in the town in Akranes the day after or two days afterwards.
Because there was a lot of people, I say, to your foreign listeners, it's not a lot of people. It's in the hundreds, low hundreds.
Big chunk of the time, though.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who suddenly didn't have a job, so to speak. Of course, they had other jobs. It's because it's not something you do all year. It's something you do like 2 or 3 months a year. But it's something you count on being able to do for 2 or 3 months a year for a lot of money. Mm. Millions a month.
Just to take it back to the election, just briefly to conclude then, because we've got the Independence Party sort of bound up in this issue as the dominant party in the outgoing government. The government will change whatever happens, but they're part of the caretaker government. And they've got this view on whaling. You don't think it's going to be politically possible, perhaps, for Bjarni to issue these licences. Is whaling going to be in any way an election issue here in Iceland?
I wouldn't say so, no. I mean, it's nowhere near the top of, I would say, anyone's list except for the owner and CEO of Kvalurhof. Mm. Near the top of people's list of the most important issues.
He only gets one
issues.
Vote as well, doesn't he? So.
Yeah. And I mean, you could ask anyone, even the people in Akranes, what are the most important election issues?
Yeah.
You could maybe find 10 people who would list whaling as one of their top 5 issues.
Yeah.
It's not a big issue.
It really isn't. And
it's an interesting issue because it draws very clear lines between parties and people.
Mm-hmm. When you ask them, that's the interesting thing. It's an important issue when you ask the question. But it's not something that people in Iceland spend a great deal of time talking about.
No.
And that may be surprising to people outside of the country. It might be disappointing, I suppose, to people outside of the country.
But it is always a hot political issue when it arises.
Yes.
But in between, no one's thinking about it.
No, and it's not going to be a big issue. It's not a big issue yet in this election, but of course we still have 12 days to go. So briefly, just remind us of the schedule then. The remaining party leaders are all going to be quizzed. I was speaking to our colleague Ari earlier on from Krakafretir, the kids' news, and of course he's lining up all the party leaders as well to make their pitch to very, very young voters or future voters, I suppose. We're hoping on Roof English Radio to get them all talking in English for 60 seconds with their minute manifestos. Into the final stretch, I suppose. A busy 12 days ahead.
Yeah, we have these constituency shows. We're finishing them off this week, where we have radio shows that are actually also shown on TV in a smaller production, where the party leaders in every constituency meet. We have, of course, the big debate show the day before the elections, Friday next week. There's a lot going on. And today we're launching the election survey, which we didn't think we would be able to do, but we managed to do it with the help of Sweden's national broadcaster, and that's basically live now. We sadly did not get a chance to translate it into different languages. However, I did try to just use the browser's translating feature, Google Translate, and it worked very well, I think.
And this is to give voters a chance to see which party they line up with.
Candidates.
Yeah,
yes.
And candidates. Okay. Yeah. And they're always quite interesting. I've used those before in the UK as well, because you do end up realizing that you've actually got more in common with a party that you thought you hated than you realized.
Exactly. And it's interesting, you might get a list of your top 10 candidates, and they might be from 9 parties.
Yes. Yes.
It's very interesting.
Election day is always fun. I voted for the first time in the presidential election as an Icelandic citizen earlier in the summer. And the first swing that I took at it, I had to go back because it was so busy. I couldn't get parked near the place.
Oh,
so,
yeah, yeah, okay.
So and I voted later in the evening. So there's my top tip is to go about 6 o'clock in the evening rather than 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You've got a better chance.
Or walk.
When do polls close?
10 o'clock.
And at that point, we at RUA, of course, will be covering this. There'll be a blog running in English as well. But that's when we will really kick this up into high gear. When do we start to get results coming in, do you think, roughly? Is it an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours? How long does it take?
I would say an hour.
Okay.
It's probably not more than an hour before we get the first.
And have you seen anything in the polling that makes you think we're not going to have a clear idea of the winning parties for some time?
There are a lot of interesting things in the polls. One of the more interesting things, I think, is going to be to see whether the smaller parties reach the 5% threshold. Mm. Because that makes a huge difference. If the Left Greens and the Socialist Party are both above the 5% threshold, if they don't reach it, a huge number of votes are dead in that sense.
Yes, because they've not been used to elect a party that is in parliament.
If they're close to the 5% threshold, but they don't reach it. Yeah. If they do reach it, and then the rest of the seats are just spread evenly on the other parties who get elected. But if they do reach it, then you... it changes the picture a lot, I think.
Because there are at least three parties there, the two that you've mentioned, and maybe the Pirate Party as well.
Pirate Party, I think, is probably won't be in danger.
Yeah. But like you say, a huge difference between them reaching 5% and them not reaching 5%. And also a massive difference for the bigger parties,
yes,
because their path to 32 seats,
yes,
their path to a coalition, narrows dramatically if they don't have the smaller parties to help them out.
But then again, I mean, the seats go to someone.
Yes.
So maybe the seats would just go to them and make them bigger instead.
Yeah.
But...
Or you get six parties, all with 10 seats, all of whom hate each other.
Because the parties who are that are near this threshold are all on the left wing.
Yes, yes.
So it's a question of, do we have 8, 10, 12, 13% of left-wing votes who are dead or not dead? That makes a world of difference. Mm.
And final question, I promise, because we could talk about this all day, it feels like we have, but do voters in Iceland think to themselves, well, I see that my favourite party is only polling at 3%, therefore I'm going to use it to vote for another party that I don't like as much, but at least that way my vote is not lost.
That's something that very well might happen.
So we could see them driving those parties even further down.
It's possible, yeah.
Yeah.
It's possible, and that's what the Left Greens were probably worried about for most of the past weeks when they saw that they were polling in at, 2.5%. A lot of people don't dare to cast their vote there in... because just of they're afraid of it not counting for anything.
Yes. And so then the question is, for that voter in that circumstance, they think which other party with a chance of being elected is the next best.
It's fit. Sort of like a death spiral if you fall below the 5% threshold.
Yes. Well, there's a long way to go, as I say. It's only the 18th of November, so a lot can change in the next 12 days. On the night itself, we will kick off our coverage in the evening on RUV English. We will blog all the way through the night until we get a result. I sort of regret saying that out loud now, and to take that anyway. We shall see. Stugur, thanks very much indeed, Stugur Helgason. Back for the final one of these next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, final update on what will be the 25th of November, just 5 days before the election. RUV English Radio, I'm Darren Adam, and you can get in touch with us anytime. We are english@ruv.is.
There's more from RUV English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. RUV English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RUV.